We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 529. Not exactly how we wanted opening day. Actually, opening day and opening weekend to go. Talk about that. Before we do that, though, Scott, so I was at Leanne's family's cousin's house for Easter, outside, of course, COVID safe. Yep. And one of her cousins, he's a Yankees fan, he listens to the show from time to time. He said, "Sometimes I cannot tell you and your co-host apart." And we've got this before. Like, this is a common thing.
Were you about to say partner and then hesitated on saying partner?
I think he did say partner, so that's why that's how I was about to say. I was like, that just sounds fucking weird. So he thinks we sound alike. And this is coming from a guy who knows me. And we've got this before from people we've met, like at BP crew events and stuff. So my name is Andrew. This is the way that I sound. 99.9% of the time, I'm the one who starts the show, unless for whatever reason, Scott does it. Now, Scott, why don't you introduce yourself and they can get a sense for what your voice sounds like.
I don't think you understand that the whole point is that they think we sound alike. So this does nothing, because as soon as we start telling people
once
who
they
we
hear
are,
us,
then they think it's the other person. So
I think
your
once
little
they hear
plan
us talking,
here is not
going to
work
can...
if they can't tell who we are still.
Bob, do you
unless
think we
I
sound
introduce
alike?
Myself every time.
When I first started listening to you guys a couple of years ago, I wasn't sure who was who. Like, you could tell there's a little bit of a difference. But you still, like, I couldn't
I'm the
say,
positive
oh, that's
one.
Andrew.
He's
that's
the
God.
One that looks at everything in a pessimistic view. It's just easy. You can tell by the opinions. You don't
but
even need to listen
voice.
To the voice.
It's about tone and sound of a voice. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we'll sound different on this one because I'm on a different mic. So
there we go. And we also have Bob on the show. Bob, the intern, making his second appearance on the podcast. All right, now that we got all those formalities out of the way. Opening weekend, opening day, takeaways, thoughts. What's your overall feeling sitting here Sunday after the Yankees dropped 2 or 3 from Toronto?
Yeah, the offense, again, if we're looking at three games and making some judgments out of the offense is exactly what I remembered it to be, anemic at times. They will hit a lot of home runs. And
they are who we thought they were.
We will see a lot of spurts of success, and we will see a lot of long balls, but we will see very infrequent fun innings and, you know, strung hits together. And it's just not that type of offense.
What's
and,
one of Boone's it was favorite a very catchphrases?
Big, it was a, hold on, it was a big, like opening day, the amount of strikeouts you see on that game, it's painful to watch when you see 13. That. And it's the same shit for the last
same
you know,
shit, different
three
day.
Years.
Yeah. What's one of Boone's favorite catchphrases? Traffic on the base paths. We had traffic on the base paths. They had traffic on the base paths all weekend. All three games, they had traffic on the base paths, and they couldn't cash in. Literally the biggest hit of the weekend for the Yankees was that bloop single by Jay Bruce.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had so many chances. Thursday opening day, 0-for-9 with runners in scoring position, 10 left on base as a team, 13 team strikeouts. Saturday, even though they won the game, yeah, they did go 4-for-10 with runners in scoring position, but they still left 12 men on base. What were they, the finals? They scored 5 runs. They should have scored 9 runs in that game. 10 team strikeouts. Sunday, 0-for-5, 9 left on base, 6 team strikeouts. It's like, and Judge was a major culprit in this for the 3-game series, especially on opening day. He leaves the bases loaded in the 7th inning, and then he leaves first and second in the 9th inning when the Yankees could have walked off. And some of these times, you just got to put bat on ball. Bat on ball, good things will happen, and they can't do it. I'm not to step on Bob's segment with overreacting based on limited sample sizes, but with this team, this particular issue is not a limited sample size. So I think an overreaction, or this is a proper reaction to be frustrated by the runners in scoring position continual issue.
The reason why it's an appropriate reaction is because this is the way the season ended. The season ended when the Yankees offense became anemic again and became a lineup that does not come in play on opportune times when they need to. And we see it time and time again. And this was one of the biggest things for me in the offseason. And there, unfortunately, just weren't that many areas to improve upon. So I'm hoping it happens from within, but it will also depend on lineup structure. Hitting, getting bat to ball against tough right-handed pitching is going to be a problem for this team unless they can figure some things out. Unless we do some shifting around, we get a guy like Clint Frazier, who had a good weekend, who got on base often, was hustling his ass off, was making plays in the field.
Do you like him in the 9 spot? Do you like him in the 9 spot?
I think him in the 9 spot. When you're at the bottom, if he keeps hitting, he's gonna move up because I want him to get more at bats. But if he's playing left field and Judge is playing right field and Stanton is playing DH, then it's fine if he's down in the 8-9 spot. I don't care, because that's where he is when you look at this lineup. But if he continues to hit and shows that he's, you know, one of the better guys on this team who can control the bat, spray the ball, then I want to see him get as many at bats as possible. And I hope that he can be a guy that, yes, he's on the right side of the plate, but the way that he is, I threw the numbers out last time about his on-base percentage and his low strikeouts. He's a guy that gets on. He's a guy that makes contact. He showed it last year where he's going the opposite way. We need someone in there to be able to hit right-handed pitching as well and balance this team and not always looking for that deep ball. And I think he's that guy. He's looking for that gap-to-gap power.
Why does, based on his name and the names in this lineup, why does he have to bat 9th? Is the thing.
I don't think he has to bat 9th. I don't think it's, first of all, again, 3 games. So if we get, you know, a few weeks in and he's still hitting the ball well, getting really good at bats, then he should be moving up in the lineup. If he's doing well, he should be moving up in the lineup. At this point,
yeah,
just figuring it out. Theoretically, there are good hitters up and down the lineup. So, you know, again, this argument could be made probably for anybody that should be bumped up or bumped down a couple spots. It's just it's an argument that we all go in circles on because you could have 15 right answers.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a major issue. And just like Hicks batting third was not the reason the Yankees lost at any point this weekend.
No, but that's also stupid.
Hicks comes up in a few situations this weekend and he had terrible at bats. Right. And I expect him to have better at bats because Hicks does not suck. For as much as I bagged on Hicks all offseason for him, for the fact that the Yankees are going to bat him third. It's not because Hicks sucks. It's because they could better utilize the lineup and the players that they have. And I think if Frazier can, if he stays consistent, you got, and he's a more of a contact guy, you got to move him up to when he's going to be hitting more with runners on base, because the Yankees do get on base. They get on base. Yeah. That's not their issue. It's just putting the freaking bat on the ball when there's guys on base. It's terrible. And maybe credit to the Blue Jays bullpen. I don't know. Is the Blue Jays pitching staff?
I mean, because there were opportunities. I
mean, are they better than we thought? Or is like the Blue Jays pitching staff better than we thought? Maybe.
Well, the pitching staff, they're going to get better, even better when Pearson comes back, and they have a couple minor leaguers that I think are going to be ready to take that another step soon. So yeah, by the end of the year, I would not be surprised if they were much better than we expected them to be. But they do have some of these middling veteran guys that you know will be exactly who we think they are. But that kid's throwing gas and looking good. I mean, he blew away Gary Sanchez today to end the game, and he had no chance really. I mean, he could not catch up to that ball. It didn't matter.
And Gary was the guy who had a good weekend.
Yeah, he just overpowered him.
Sometimes credit to the other pitcher. I understand that. You're not going to go 10 for 10 with runners in scoring position. But it's a glaring hole on this team. And as good as this offense can be, and as good as the number, like the spreadsheet spit out for this team, because all the guys and their WRC plus and their WOBAs and all these fancy nerd stats, which I admit, I get into some of them. Sometimes it just comes down putting the bat on the ball when there's runners on base and they can't do it.
They got the season to figure this out. That's basically the way I'm looking at this. Like, they're looking at this season, they got to figure out this batting lineup, because come October, you know, that's when they are going to need to be able to have some confidence going in against these tough right-handed pitchers and have a lineup construction that just makes more sense, instead of just throwing shit at the wall and saying, "Oh, yeah, Aaron Hicks is our three hitter." There's no real reason behind that. I don't understand the actual logic.
Got to break up the righties.
Yeah. That's the thing. So, but again, we have a season to figure that stuff out. And I do believe in Clint Frazier. I think he's going to have a really good year.
He was definitely a positive from the weekend. Gary Sanchez was a big positive from the weekend.
Definitely.
He needed, do you agree, him getting off to a good start was perhaps the most important of anyone on the team?
Oh, for sure. He needs to get off to a good start. I mean, I don't classify just this weekend as a good start, but yes.
But he needs positive things to happen, because mentally, you know how it can get with Gary Sanchez. So he needed positive things to happen. Home run on opening day, home run in the second game. He threw a runner out on opening day. He hustled an infield single out, which I think was like the biggest shocker of the entire weekend, was Gary hustle. He did have a throwing error in Kluber's start, but otherwise, really good weekend from Gary.
The mental side of the game doesn't just like click on because you have a good weekend. Like, this is something that you have to prepare for in the off season. You have to get yourself ready. You have to work with someone. You have to really get those reps in well ahead of the season. So everything that we've seen in the spring and, you know, even into this weekend, Gary Sanchez has looked good, has had the right approach. Like, everything has been very positive. So, you know, yes, we talk about this hot start as something that's needed for him. It's a very good thing. But again, like, I don't think if he's coming into the season with a different mental approach and he's ready to kind of attack the season in a different way, then I don't think a bad weekend or a bad week of start should affect what he's doing. If he's actually taken care of that problem, or if he's actually come to address that problem, you know what I mean? Like, it's not something you could just flip on and flip off. You got to work at the mental side of things as well. You got to be able to get yourself into a mindset, get yourself into a confidence level so that you're entering the season that way, and you can't let those little things bother you. And that's that's something that you can improve upon. And so far, again, seemingly, he's definitely in a good place. So
I disagree with you, because I think Gary Sanchez was in such a bad place at the end of last year that even a bad weekend could derail his season. I don't think that's unrealistic to say. You're right in the fact that it shouldn't. Like, DJ LeMahieu didn't have he got two hits this weekend. If DJ LeMahieu was 0 for 10 or 0 for 15 to start the season, I would not care, because DJ LeMahieu is going to keep his head down. He's going to keep grinding, and he's going to start hitting line drives all over the place. Gary Sanchez, if he starts 0 for 8 and he makes a throwing error and he gets booed, I think that could just be it for him, because of how bad it has gone for him recently.
I mean, I guess But again, if you are looking at a player who has put in the work on the on that side of the of his game, then it should not affect it. If you're
should
actually
not, should not and would not are yeah, two but, different
but
things.
My
though.
Point is that those are things that you can improve upon, and from the things that we've seen and heard, he's made that a point
best
of emphasis.
Of life.
He's made best no, he's made that life. A point of emphasis. So if he's done that in the offseason as well and leading up to it, then a week. Then it should be a different type of Gary Sanchez mentality wise towards this, towards the sport. So
what we'll is two other position players I want to touch on before we get to the pitching. Giancarlo Stanton sat on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I saw Max Goodman report that it was a scheduled off day.
Yeah.
Scheduled off day after they played Thursday. He DH'd on Thursday. He didn't play baseball on Friday. He DH'd on Saturday. And then he has scheduled off day on Sunday. I mean, what the hell is going on?
You gotta make sure that they're ready. You know, you can't work them too hard. These guys, they don't get paid enough money.
8 at bats. He's 0-for-8. Not that should matter. He's scheduled off day after two deep. Can't play more than one day in a row. Come
especially
on,
against the team opening weekend again. You know, at opening weekend, a home opening weekend. First time back with the fans in the stands. Like, you can't get your superstars in there.
It's not like it's sleeting outside and you're worried. It was beautiful on Sunday afternoon. It was 60 degrees and sunny out there. It's like he's not going to pull a muscle, hopefully.
Well, it's because they wanted to get Judge
Gardner,
a day at DH.
Judge a half day, Gardner in there. And you know what? I'm going to eat my words. Clint Frazier started, and it wasn't just against the lefty. He started against the righty, and he started in right field for when they did the whole thing with Gardner, but I mean, Giancarlo needing a scheduled off day. Bob, there was nothing that came out other than it was just a scheduled off day, right? Like, if you could just do a quick Google search to make sure
Boone did say that he's not planning to play Stanton more than five days in a row.
He's going to play the next. Okay.
Yeah.
There was it an just off doesn't day. Really there was, make, there was yeah. an off day.
Well, there's an off day on Thursday, so he's going to hopefully play the three against Baltimore, and then he'll have an off day.
Yeah, he
and
should. There's no reason he shouldn't play.
But even if he played today, that would only be 5 days in a row.
Yeah, and he had Friday off, so it's not. It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't make sense.
And I'm not just saying this because I made him one of my bold predictions. Needs to lead the team in homers. It's just if he can't DH every day, then what the hell is he good for?
No, it's strange. The rotation doesn't need to be this much of a thing, especially when you're three games in. You can go a stretch. You can go a home opener without resting your guys, especially if there's an off day in there to plan for a potential rain out on opening day.
How about let's get him some at-bats so he gets into a groove and he can be one of the most impactful
bats. Of all people,
bats.
We know that Giancarlo Stanton needs to get into that groove as well. The guy mechanically is just so very different when he's not on. When he's on, he's a monster. When he's not on, he looks like a totally different. He looks like a guy that doesn't even belong in the major leagues. It's a very much a night and day situation at the plate for him. So yeah, I want him going.
Their plan must be Giancarlo gets an off day every 5 days, and then on that day, Judge will move to DH, Gardner will go into left, and Clint will go into right.
You think it's that scripted? I think it's going to change.
Oh yeah,
I think Gardner will go into the right side. I think that, you know, Bruce is going to get a day and then someone else is going to
slide over.
Well,
maybe when Voit comes back, if Bruce is still on the roster.
Yeah, but, well, it'll be something like that. There will be, there are other people, Talkman's got to get some playing time. So it's going to be more
Talkman,
of a
he's just a base running weapon. He comes in opening day, steals two
hey,
bases.
Those instincts are real. Those instincts are real. He is not a fast runner, but his instincts are there. He definitely is one of the better base runners.
Yeah. I don't see how he gets much playing time. I guess Boone did say their plan is to get him some reps at first base. So our joking plan of how bad could Mike Talkman be at first base, we might actually get to see.
You were joking. I wasn't joking. I'm saying get that man a glove and let's see what happens. It's not that.
But why are they doing this now? Like, why not start this 3 weeks ago?
Well, because Luke Voit wasn't hurt 3 weeks ago.
But they still needed first base depth, even with only Luke Voit.
Not really. They had Jay Bruce, and then they had...
Jay Bruce would not be on this roster if Luke Voit was healthy.
I know, but Mike Talkman might not be either. So there's a possibility where none of those guys are on the roster. At this point, they're looking for every possible way to keep him on the roster. So let's give him a first base glove and let's see what happens.
The pitching staff.
I love it. I want that to happen. Yes, I am in the camp of give anybody with a major league contract a first base glove and see what happens, because I think that they could all do it probably, unless you're
David Wright. The pitching staff. So, I mean, I know they didn't win the Cole start. Last year we said they got to win all the Cole starts or else that's bad news. But I was more interested, to be honest, in Kluber and Herman's starts, because I know what Cole's going to be. He's going to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. I'm not worried about that. Corey Kluber kind of got in trouble with his pitch count. He didn't have his command. He walked 3 and 4 innings, fell behind a lot of hitters. He ended up giving up the home run to Semien, and that ended his day. And then Herman today gives up the 2 home runs in the second inning, but they pulled him after 3. And I didn't quite understand pulling him that soon.
Yeah, it didn't really make a lot of sense. Today was a weird day for me when I'm looking at the pitching staff, because after he came in, obviously we saw Michael King come in and pitch really well. I mean, he pitched really well. He's got that new breaking ball that O'Neill was talking about quite often, and Cone, they were really talking about it on the broadcast quite a bit. As a new pitch, another one that gives him more of that arsenal, that repertoire that allows him to get, you know, deeper into lineups and a little bit further along, and just gives more guesswork to the players. And it's becoming, you know, a much more reliable pitch, which is great. And he looked phenomenal. Boone does these weird things, and it seemingly has, like, he does have a script to, I think, some of these starts. Herman got pulled. Michael King comes in no way that he doesn't treat the starting pitchers the same way he treats a bullpen game or a bullpen pitcher in a deficit. And it was a 3-run deficit for a while. Then they got the run back, 2-run deficit. Michael King's still out there. Look, yeah, Michael King's looking great. Eye test guy over here is like, keep him in. He's looking great. I have
no
problem with that.
68 pitches. Like, he was cruising.
He had a 4-pitch inning, I think, in the 7th or 8th.
And that's what he can do, because he can pitch to contact.
Yes. He looks very good. But in no way is Boone leaving a starting pitcher into the 6th inning the way that he does,
right?
The way that he does Michael King. It's like when they go down, he's like, "Well, we're going to ride Michael King.
Yeah.
We're going to ride him." You know, if he gives up 4 runs, when he pitches to the gem, he's going out there, he's going to pitch at least 5 innings. And it's just a weird thing, because there's no common thread here with the way that he treats a lot of these pitchers. And if there's a deficit, although it's a 2 or 3 run deficit, you're still very much in the game, especially with this lineup. They can get, you know, a bunch of runs back very quickly. He did this last year a lot too. He's just like an automatic punt. And punting doesn't mean that you're giving up the game. Punting, in my opinion, is like, okay, this guy is just going to take the ball for the rest of the time, right? Like, to me,
how much do you think the version
of a punt with a relief pitcher?
How much today, though, was what he was seeing King do on the mound was good.
Great. So if that's the case, if that's a new thing, if that's what we're doing now, if we're looking at what the guy is doing and saying that guy is rolling today, let's keep him going. I don't care how many times through the lineup he's been, pitch count is manageable, we're going to keep him going. Now we're talking about some real baseball, about some eye test shit here, and you got me excited.
That's managing. That's managing baseball.
Yeah, that's managing. That's seeing with your own two eyes, identifying something that's happening in a given game and staying with it or going against it depending on a situation. If that is the case, if that is a new thing that we're doing and that's new to this year, and I'm going to throw away the things, similar trends that I saw last year him do, then great. That's outstanding. I hope that he's doing that. I hope that that's a philosophy that is getting back in trends across baseball, because it's a good thing. Because we saw today, a guy like Michael King, probably have him going 2-3 innings, right? Maybe at most you're very happy if that's the case.
The thing with King last year was we would see him good for 1 or 2 innings, and then they would try and push him. And then when he faced the order for the second time, it was a disaster. That was King's issue last year. But hold on. You're right in that Boone treats a 2-run deficit the same as he treats a 9-run deficit.
Yeah.
And
it's just a strange way to do it. It's a strange way to operate.
Today, it didn't, you know, King kept it a 2-run game. So the Yankees were in the game till the very end. Fine. But a lot of times he will punt and he turns in the 5th inning a 2-run deficit into a 4-run deficit into an 8-run deficit because he's punting. Yes, I totally agree.
If Michael King comes out for a 4th inning and gives up three runs. Everybody's like, why would you let him in? You got three really good innings from Michael King. You let him go a fourth.
It's a no-win situation. Why are you getting so greedy? That's the job. That's the job.
Right.
But I mean, that's the job.
But that's the thing. Like, even if he wasn't pitching well, like, I still think that happens. And then like Boone's like, oh, now you're just going to eat it. He's going to go six anyway.
But so the thing about the bullpen this weekend was, though, it was thin because obviously Wilson is hurt, Britton is hurt, and Chapman was serving a suspension the first 2 days. And the bullpen stepped up on Saturday. They got five innings out of Loaisiga, Luttage. How do I say it? Luttage?
Luttke?
Luttke. Is it Luttke?
I think I'm closer to
you. Bob, you know
how
to pronounce this? Lucas Luttke? Luttage?
I'm pretty sure it's Luttke.
Okay. O'Day?
Bob's Chad talking, Green. But he's muted.
It looks like it's Luttke.
Luttke, yeah. Who are we going to go with here? Andrew or me when it comes to pronunciations, please?
They got the bullpen stepped up on Saturday. I mean, the bullpen was great the whole time. I mean, are you going to blame on opening day? Nick Nelson comes in. It's a runner on second situation opening extra inning rules.
He did give up a double.
Is that a ball also that Judge can catch? Because some people were getting on Judge for that. And we've got maybe spoiled with how good Judge is in the outfield.
Yes. I have no problem. I understand where Judge is. We want him to get hurt. We don't want him to get hurt. We want him to go after balls. We don't want him to
make
get hurt.
Make diving catches. We yell at him
when he doesn't, like, you know, leg out for, use 7 foot, you know, the span of his body to catch a ball. Nick Nelson came in and let up that hit. Dumb rule, had a runner on second. So dumb rule ERA right there.
Not an earned run.
Is that an earned run? It's not an earned run.
No.
Okay, good. Strikes out the side.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You look good. The kid looks good. I still very high on him. It's obviously one weekend. So,
do you remember last year against the Mets when the Yankees lost on a walk-off 2-run home run, but it was because the guy started on second. So it was the first batter of the inning hit a 2-run home run. Obviously, that was the first time that happened in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, stupid. This is a stupid rule. I'm sorry. People are saying it's not stupid on Twitter that the Yankees have the same opportunity in the next inning. I get it. Still dumb. Still dumb.
Actually, save it, Bob, because we have a mailbag question about the extra inning rule. So we'll talk about it.
Did that guy get earned? Did he do something to earn his spot on second base? No, he did not.
So a couple more updates from Boone. Luke Voit, Boone said he expects Voit to be back in May. Considerably sooner than June, as we discussed. And Justin Wilson is due back this coming weekend against Tampa, which is April 9th. So
great.
Good news on both of those fronts. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit betterhelp.com/bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/bronx21. One more time, betterhelp.com/bronx21. Couple of league items before we get to Bob's segment, which I'm excited about. Bob's first segment, no pressure. Francisco Lindor, he put the deadline on the Mets. I want a contract before opening day or else I'm not talking about it during the season. I will go to free agency. Signed a 10-year, $341 million contract. I was actually surprised at how big the contract was. Lindor's a great player. I like Lindor as a player. I didn't think he was going to get 300 plus.
Oh, I did. I mean, he's the way that the contracts have been trending. Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best shortstops in the league. Everybody understands what's happening with shortstops next year. There's going to be a lot of them on the market. I think they needed to lock up. The Mets need to lock up a guy, and Lindor was right there for the taking. Obviously, they made the trade for him. So I think the intention the entire time was to sign him for this long term deal. And the fact that Cohen's going to walk in there and nickel and dime a guy that's going to be their shortstop of the future, not happening. They were going to set him up. So I'm not surprised that he got the money that he got. And I'm not surprised that they got the deal done before the season because, it was the right thing to do for the franchise. And, everybody was expecting Cohen to come in and spend money. And that's what he's doing. So,
yeah. And obviously, Cohen is going to be an owner that is fine giving out massive contracts. And that's a good thing for the Mets. And you know what? That's a good thing for the city of New York. I think it's good when the Mets are not inept and both teams have owners that are trying to win and the Wilpons aren't doing stupid stuff. I think it's good.
Yeah, definitely. I was on, we released this episode on Friday with the guys from Nick's film school. It was a fun crossover, but we did a ranking of the eight teams in New York and we did a power ranking, and the way we did it was how big the parade would be if you won a championship. That was the way that we did it because there's a number of ways that you could do it. And probably come with some different options here, but I mean the Mets are definitely one of the biggest. They would have a very big parade. They would have
if it's based on the parade. I think actually the Knicks would have the biggest parade.
I still think the Yankees would, but I think that it would be close for the Knicks. Yeah, I had the Knicks number
because three. Because I know the Nets are now technically a New York City sports.
Nets are 7 or 8.
Yeah, so it still most people in New York, if you're a basketball fan, you're a Knicks fan. It's not 50-50. It's not even close to 50-50.
No one in a million years would even get close to 50-50 or even say that. It's not even a conversation.
Right. So it's like
the Nets have a New Jersey fan base from before, and then I don't know who goes to that parade for the Brooklyn Nets, because I do believe that some people from Jersey who were big Nets fans, I was growing up, I fell off a bit. There were a million reasons why, but life got over complicated, and you got to follow a certain amount of teams. Like you can't follow them all at some point, at least I couldn't. And when they moved away from Jersey into Brooklyn, it did rub me the wrong way. The way that it went down, it rubbed me the wrong way. And I fell off. I just stopped caring as much.
Do you know who goes to the Nets parade? Taurus, who accidentally stumble their way into the parade route, and a guy who walks out of a lunch spot out of Chipotle with a burrito being like, oh shit, the parade's today. I guess I'll watch it before I go back to work. That's who goes to the Mets.
I don't know
parade.
Who's at that parade. Either way, the Mets, it is more fun when the Mets have a good team and a good owner, I think too, because I like it. I personally enjoy when both teams are good. I think the banter back and forth is fun.
You see what the White Sox have been doing for Eloy Jimenez? It's a little over the top. Do you agree? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Why don't you tell the people what you're talking about?
So they honored Jimenez. The whole team signed his jersey. They did a pregame ceremony for him on opening day. And then they dedicated their first win of the season to Eloy Jimenez, who had a very serious, terrible injury, tore his pectoral muscle, out for the season. He's not dead. And if you did not follow baseball and you looked at these pictures and you heard what they were saying, you would have thought the man died.
Did he do it playing baseball? Or like training for baseball?
It didn't. Yeah, from what I understand, he did it training. I don't know. What could we
talk about? All right.
I saw a similar situation on Twitter where it was like a team announced, like, get or like keep him in your thoughts and prayers. It was like a basketball player. And like the picture's like, it's like black and white. Everyone's like, what the hell? Like, did he die? And then he quotes the tweet and he's like, man, I was almost like replying rest in peace to like my own like death post. It's just like, sometimes I just gotta not be so serious about some small injuries.
I mean, if the White Sox are going to use this as like motivation, if that's even the right word, like this is going to be their thing this year, do it for Eloy. It's like, okay, fine, but he's still alive. Like Luke Voit, he crushed his way out there on opening day. No one's having a freaking ceremony with flowers for Luke Voit.
That maybe we should do that and then just have that guy come
Jabroni
back.
Jabroni will be back considerably sooner than June.
Yeah, have him come back in a month and be like, yes, here we go. It worked. Let's go. And now he's on the team.
I don't want to, we don't get really political. We do touch on some issues. Baseball announced they're moving the All-Star game and the draft out of Georgia in response to the new voting restrictions that were passed in Georgia. This came after Joe Biden recommended, I guess is the word I would use, recommended baseball take action and move the game out of Atlanta. And I think for the most part, people are saying the commissioner made the right move here. We actually got an email in response to the news article that Guizdala posted saying that, like, just getting political. I'm like, all right. But I think most people are in support of this decision.
Yeah, I don't know. It is a baseball decision, and it's interesting that, because that's a big to do to move an All-Star
game.
That's a lot of
3 months before the game.
Yeah, there's a lot of logistics there to you know, get something going in another city. So it's not something that they certainly took lightly. It's something that was that's a big impact.
So
it sucks for Braves fans.
Well, that's also the thing. It's like games are still played in Atlanta.
Yeah,
all the time. So it's like, okay, but it's a statement. That's what it is. It's a statement to move the draft and the All-Star game out of there. Okay, fine, cool. Do you want to touch anything more on that or just move on?
To be honest, I don't know enough about it to talk too much more about it. But yeah, it's a big baseball move. Sometimes when they do things like this too, it affects like obviously like the workers and the people around it. And I don't know. I understand what they're doing. But there is definitely a trickle down effect when something like that is done.
I actually saw, this was not a quote that Manfred said, but it was a quote, someone talking about Manfred, and it kind of put it in perspective for me. It said, no matter what Manfred did, he would be making a statement. And that's so much pressure when you think about it. It's okay. I'm making a statement either way. And no matter if I don't take action and I just say, we're going to leave the game there because this is what we have planned, that's a statement. So he had to do something. And both things were a statement. It's just kind of like, kind of put it into perspective for me when I thought about it that way. No matter what you do, you're making a statement.
Yeah, it's true. Because you have to go one way or the other. You just, that's the only way that you can do it, especially when you're in a position like that. So that's a big game, and moving it was a big statement.
All right, let's get to Bob the Intern's segment, his first one ever. Juan, you have the floor, Bob.
All right, well, I mean, it's been 3 games. Opening weekend wasn't really how we expected it to go. There's a lots of thoughts and opinions circling, a lot of overreacting. So I've taken of the overreactions that have just been swirling, and I've sort of swung them into possibilities and predictions that could actually come true. So I want you guys to consider some of these possibilities and sort of say what you think about them. So the segment is called Overreactions That May Become True. And the first one is Gary Sanchez will hit 40 or more home runs this season. This is more of an optimistic one.
Here's why this could absolutely happen. Because even if Gary Sanchez...
Because it should happen? Because it should happen.
well, should 40 home runs out of a catcher. Okay, whatever.
Out of Gary Sanchez. Not
even
just
if Gary Sanchez didn't have two home runs this weekend and he just had four hits and two of them were doubles, we could say, well, he's locked in. 40 home runs, here we come. So it's like, this is totally doable because of who Gary Sanchez can be.
Right.
And that's why this start was so important. Bob, I think you agree with me on this with Gary. A hot start could make is probably going to make or break his season is how he plays this month in April.
Yeah, I mean, the Gary train, I think, once it starts slowing down, it can really, it almost becomes...
Off the rails.
It derails.
So that doesn't just stop.
That theory, though, can happen at any point. Doesn't need to be just a hot start. He could get off to a hot start, and then all of a sudden in May, he could have a three-week large lull, and now your little theory is back in play. So,
but it's easier to say, get back to what he was doing, where if his batting average is 140 and it's April 25th, that's different than if his batting average goes from 260 down to 220 on May 15th or something like that.
The bigger news is that Gary Sanchez cares about his batting average. That's bigger news because I don't think he gives a rat's ass what his batting average is.
No, but he doesn't want it to be 147, which is what it was last year.
I don't think he cares.
I think he cares about a 147.
I think there's a feeling of either he's producing or he's not producing. And wherever that batting average lands in the feeling of producing and not being in the papers of being criticized consistently is in that place. Or if he's just got that really good feeling of the ball's hitting, the ball is, if he's mashing the ball and there's production there and there's runs batted in and there's home runs and you're seeing the hard hit, the percentage going up, and you're not seeing, you know, some of these just bad at bats, I think Gary Sanchez will be fine.
How many home runs did he have last year?
The results of some of these statistics matter to him as much.
He had 10 home runs in 178 plate appearances last year. That's pretty good. That's like a 30 home run pace if he plays a full season.
Right. That's why I think 40 for him is
do you think last year, just because he saw 10 home runs, he was satisfied? He was hitting 147.
Yeah, the production wasn't there. I mean, there were also spurts where those came in. You're looking at the whole season. Again, these gotta happen. 147 is if you're hitting 147, everything else is probably bad too. Let's just be clear on that. If you're hitting 147, everything else is probably bad too. Okay,
you're hitting under 200.
So you're using an extreme situation.
If the first number of your batting average isn't two, everything else is bad.
And if it is, he doesn't care. If it's one, you're not really a major leaguer. Okay, I don't care if you like the stat or not. If you're below the Mendoza line, that Mendoza line plays today as well. You know, give me some self-respecting major leaguers. Even if you don't care about it, you're like, I gotta be above that. Still on the baseball card.
All right, what's the next one, Bob?
I think.
All right, the next one is the Yankees offense will average less than 5 runs per game, which would be the first time since 2016. And that's not really to say, oh, that it's less than 5. That's more of like, are we going to see a drop off in the offensive production? Because this weekend looked pretty shitty.
No, because this is how the offense has struggled with runners in scoring position for 3 years, but they still average a high amount of runs because they hit so many damn home runs. I still expect them to just absolutely maul bad pitching. They're going to hit a ton of 2-run and 3-run home runs. They're going to win games 7-4 because they hit 4 home runs. And their average offensive output's going to be fine. I'm not worried about their average offensive output.
What did they average in 2019?
Runs per game. They averaged 5.82 runs per game.
Okay. I expect a almost an identical year.
But really, in 2019, the only player in the lineup that was good with runners on base was LeMahieu.
Yeah.
I expect almost an identical year.
Well, let's hope it doesn't end in identical fashion.
That's the thing. When we're looking at these numbers during the regular season, when you're looking at the big averages, it's hard to really, you know, pull out some nuggets that will translate into how you win a championship, to be honest. Because those averaging the amount of runs in a regular season, you can definitely skew that by mauling the Orioles pitchers 19 times and throw some large numbers in there and skew so you're getting a lot of home runs in those
points. By the way, the Orioles mauled the Red Sox pitching all weekend, so
good for them. I told you early season. There's some early season momentum. I called that. I said that that's why they're going to lose two games potentially. Hopefully it won't be this week.
He's already backtracking on the prediction.
No backtracking. It's two. I saw you send a message somewhere of 19-0, which was just a lie. But I think that when you're looking at the average numbers, it's not going to tell us what this team is necessarily, but how do you get to those numbers? How do you get to that five runs? That to me tells you hell of a lot more about what this team is doing and how they're rolling than, you know, they hit, you know, 2-3 run home runs. Just doesn't tell me that much.
Okay. Well, the next one is about Domingo Germán, and it is after today's game. I mean, he pitched 4 innings, 300 runs, not a great outing at all. And with the depth the Yankees have at starting pitching, is it possible that by the postseason, we don't even see Domingo Germán on the mound? With Devi Garcia and Severino coming back at some point throughout the season, is that a possibility?
Yeah, total possibility.
Big time.
Because it's not even just because of he could pitch himself. It's because he could pitch himself out of a job, but also then they're just going to totally move on from him, I think. I don't think there's going to be second chances with Germán this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a short leash, I think. And then also, so if he's not pitching well, and again, we talked about this. This is not, when you're looking at the situation here, there's off-the-field issues, and then you're looking at on-the-field, dismissing a guy after he's getting an opportunity to pitch well and then doesn't pitch well, and you're like, it was dependent on whether you're producing on the field. But it's his job. That's what his job is. His job is to pitch. He's getting paid to pitch on the mound. So if he's not doing that, then yes, because of the other things, I think that there is a shorter leash. Not to mention, you do have more depth. That said, they're going to keep him around as long as possible, most likely, but they're not going to probably release him outright. I don't know. Do we know how many options Domingo Germán has, if any? That would be something good to know.
Well, you said he pitched 4 innings. He pitched 3 innings. This is coming off a perfect spring training for him on the mound. He was fantastic this spring training. No, I know that.
But they pull him after
3 innings. I understand. Like, I didn't get it. I didn't get why you pull him.
Because Michael King was going to throw 6 innings. It was in the book.
Right. Okay.
It's weird because you know, if you look at the argument for Michael King going 6 innings beyond the fact that he was pitching well, like that, okay, if that's the case, then great. I love it. You should do that every time. But if it was because the bullpen was, you know, weakened at this point and they needed to get someone in there to take more support.
Let Germán stay out there.
Let Germán stay out there. Exactly. So I don't really understand what he was doing. It just conveniently worked out for him. That's what I think happened. I think Michael King pitched his ass off and now Boone looks good because of it. But I'm not sitting here saying that's the full reason why he was still out there. I think he was going to be out there no matter what.
There's a situation where Germán goes 3, Michael King goes 2 1/3, then they have to bring in like Luis Sessa. And then Chapman has to pitch an inning because he's back and he's the only guy who hasn't pitched yesterday. So it's like,
and what I'm saying is after
everyone pitches.
When it was 3-0 and Michael King is in, it didn't matter what Michael King did as much because he was going to pitch 5-6 innings. That's what I think. That's what I think was the deal. Like, he was in full punt mode. And it just so happened that Michael King pitched his ass off. Which is just strange.
Yeah. All right, so the next one is the Yankees' bullpen is going to be better than the Yankees' rotation. Is that going to happen this year?
According to my prediction.
If Michael King is coming out of the bullpen throwing six innings of...
Maybe he's going to be a Swiss Army knife this year. Maybe I was wrong last year. It's a Swiss Army knife. That was a Swiss Army knife performance today.
That was just a good performance. Could they be better? Yeah, yes, they could be. And the reason why they could be is because we still, even after a weekend of baseball, after 3 games, shocking that we still have some uncertainties in the starting rotation. That is still a thing. We are very much, we saw it this weekend. We saw the uncertainties. Domingo Germán did not get any length at all. Gave up some home
runs.
Neither
did Kluber.
Corey Kluber goes in, throws, what, 4 and change.
4 plus. He pitched
four
into
change.
The 5th
okay,
inning.
Okay, so now, and is walking guys in pitch count. We know when he gets into that 5th inning, when he gets into that 5th inning, it's going to be very dicey whether he's going to be able to finish that 5th inning or get into the 6th inning, because they're going to be very close to monitoring what he's doing. So we don't know what to expect from him, you know, into May. I think after we get, you know, eight starts, we'll have a better idea of what he is, I guess. But the uncertainty of the pitching staff and the starting rotation is still there. And we may, by the end of the season, like, Bob, you're asking if Domingo Herman's going to be there. I would not be surprised if we had Davey Garcia in there. I wouldn't be surprised if Clark Schmidt had a significant amount of starts to come into it. I wouldn't be surprised if someone we don't even know about has, some starts. Michael King slots in as a spot starter. Like, there, it could look very different. We don't know because there are so many uncertainties. But the reason why that's kind of okay is because their pitching depth and the youth in AAA and the guys that they have to come up are talented. They have talent ready to come up. And that's why they're in a unique position.
Yeah, totally. And the last one, just to blow this whole series completely out of proportion, but are the Blue Jays going to win the division over the New York Yankees?
I'll go first. I was watching on, one of the MLB channel show, MLB network shows, and two of the three picked the Blue Jays to win the division. And
trolling.
After talking with Arden Zwelling the other day and getting our annual preview with him, I think this is the third year I've spoken with him. I thought they were going to be better last year because of the offense. And
they did make the playoffs last year.
No, I mean, than him. I thought they were going to be better than they were, even compared to what he thought. Because it did seem like those kids were ready to take that. They have a level of confidence that's really unmatched. They really do. They feel like they've been in the league for like five, 6 years.
They've got a lot of talent.
And they have a lot of talent. Yeah, they have a lot of talent. And then they added two really, really key pieces that I think are just going to be absolutely gold for this lineup. George Springer, when he's back and healthy, and Marcus Semien are absolutely perfect additions to this lineup. You add in Ryu, and then who's been there, obviously, but Nate Pearson, who I think is going to be one of the best pitchers in the American League East. When he's ready to go and healthy, he's a little nicked up, but he's dynamic. And they have some other kids, I forget their names, that are no slouches in that could possibly get into this rotation. They scare me a bit. They really do because of their confidence level. So I think it's going to be a bit of a dogfight. I know that the Yankees struggle with the Blue Jays, and I don't think that's going to stop. That might not stop for like 10 years, 10 plus years, because these guys are going to be around for a while. So I think between the Blue Jays, the Tampa Rays and the Yankees, there's going to be some dogfights. And yeah, I think the Blue Jays are going to be
all three of those teams could make the playoffs, though, still.
They could.
Here's the thing with the Blue Jays.
It would be tough for three, but...
No, yeah, they could. Two wild cards.
Yeah. I think with the American League East and how everybody's going to beat each other up, it could be tough. I see an American League Central team come, I think they might get two.
If the Blue Jays bullpen is really improved, I mean, this might be an overreaction from the weekend, but that's what we're doing. That's the segment.
Yeah.
Blue Jays bullpen shuts the Yankees bats down in the late innings. If their bullpen is going to be locked down, then yes, they could absolutely win the division.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That is an X factor. If they have a bullpen that is good, it looks like they have a closer three games in, looks like they have a dominant closer. If he's a dominant closer and they have some guys to lead up to him and they get some consistency out of there, this team is going to be trouble.
Yeah.
This team is going to be trouble. Because if they catch fire, they're not going to let go of it. They have winners on the team and they have just raw young talent with a pedigree. Three guys that have a pedigree of, Dante Bichette's not a Hall of Famer. Two of three Hall of Fame pedigree. And Dante Bichette was a damn good player. Damn good on steroids.
Oh, so you're talking about the dad's pedigree. It's like, what do they all get on FaceTime? Like,
no, I'm saying pedigree.
Hey, Vlad Jr.'s talking to his dad. Can you talk about your pedigree?
Do you understand what pedigree is?
Yeah, I do.
I don't think you do.
No, pedigree, I do. But how do these players have pedigree?
Genetics. That's why.
No, isn't pedigree like respect from others?
No. Think of a dog, like the pedigree. They're like breeding baseball players. They have Hall of Fame talent in their blood. So they've been in the dugout. They've been in the clubhouse. They've been with these guys they know the system. They are so confident that, When they catch fire, you don't have to tell me. Everybody who's listening to this knows I'm right. And for the record, Scott Reinen was right, not Andrew Rotondi. He was wrong. For those of you who can't tell us apart. They have a mixture there that is a bit scary. And with George Springer fully healthy and a Marcus Semien, who both of those guys can rake, it's trouble.
Yeah. So I guess that's, I guess out of all of those things that you said, Bob, like, I think the least overreaction is that the Blue Jays are going to be a real threat.
Yeah.
They can do different things with the ball too. That's the other thing. They're not home run heavy. And any team who's not home run heavy later in the season becomes a worry for me.
Let's get to mailbags. We got a couple of good ones. And finally, I have someone on the show who's going to read the mailbags, so I don't have to butcher names. All right, Bob, take it away. Who's up first?
Yeah, so the first one's coming from the situation we saw on opening day. It was ninth inning, one out, runners on first and third. DJ grounds out to third, or grounds to third base with the infield in. But Talkman is running on contact and is thrown out at home. So right, Andrea... So
Andrea asks, yeah.
Yeah, so Andrea asked, do the analytics say that one should go on contact from third with the infield in?
So I Andrea DM'd me this question, and I didn't know off the top of my head what the analytics say. And the first thing I thought of was how analytics does not support stealing bases because it's not worth the risk. You rather have the guy try and hit a two-run home run or hit the ball in the gap and score that way than have the guy potentially get thrown out at second and then have to rely on another base hit. So I was thinking, oh, maybe the analytics wouldn't say to run on contact. But then I thought about it more, and even from an analytics standpoint, the contact play makes total sense there because even if he gets thrown out at home, which Talkman did, it's first and second, two outs with a man up at the plate. There's no difference really between first and second, two outs, and first and third, two outs when you only need one run to win. It's basically the same situation. So I think the analytics say to go on contact. So I liked the play, make the guy make a play. The third baseman made a play. Talkman was out at home.
So it's based on the situation that on the base path as well goes into it. That makes sense because obviously two outs, runner on third, still got to get a base hit.
I mean, there's wild pitches and stuff, but
sure, yeah.
But really, it's not that different.
But bad, ball in play. That's what you're looking at that point, right? Identifying what could happen with ball in play, and even then, you still need a base hit, or you need the runner to get to first. So I'm fine with it. Talkman, first base to first to second. He stole that instinctually. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He's got good instincts. He can read pitchers well. He reads situations well. And I really do like him for that. Again, same thing. Took a kind of a walking running lead and stole third. Not the fastest guy, not the best, base stealer in the world, or not the fastest runner on the base pass, but a good base stealer because of the instincts. The runner on third instinctually. The only thing I'll say that's against him is, again, he's not the fastest guy, not the fastest first step. He's more of an instinct guy. So when you're looking at that, knowing the player, the contact play is a bit of a higher risk because I don't think he starts as fast as some other guys. If that's Tyler Wade, I think it's a much closer play and he potentially gets in. But with Talkman, again, he's got a bit of a caboose there, and he's hauling some weight getting down the line. Still a bang bang play. I don't mind it because I think that you still have to make the ball has to be perfectly hit, and then a perfect throw and catch and tag has to all happen. So I'm good with it either way. I think that it's probably the smart move, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah,
and plus DJ LeMay, who's up, right? So you're thinking that there's most likely there's a very good opportunity that the ball is going to be hit harder.
Well, the contact play, I mean, I know the contact play means you run on contact, but you still have to sort of anticipate contact, and it's easier to anticipate contact with LeMahieu than it is anyone else in the lineup.
Sure. Yeah, it does help your first step. There's no doubt about that. Tyler, right, what's interesting now, though, about that play is that the catcher has to give the lane for the runner, right? So if it's even just a fraction of a second later, if the runner's is down the line just a little bit more, then that now takes into play where the catcher can actually catch the ball and then not be in the way of the runner. Because if Tyler Wade is running, he's got a faster first step, he's down there a little bit faster. If he's like, I don't know, 2 feet further down the base path or a foot and a half further down the base path, that comes into a situation because the catcher was definitely over towards the base path.
Didn't Tyler Wade already pinch run for someone else?
I'm not saying that was a decision. I'm comparing them as individuals and athletes and like the situation itself. If it was someone a little faster, it might have been a bang-bang play.
Yeah, I think Tyler Wade had already pinch run for someone.
Yeah, I was not calling for Tyler Wade there. I'm just I'm saying that in
that
situation, a faster guy may have already got in. So it makes this conversation almost moot because it could have been bang-bang, could have been either way.
All right. So for the next mailbag question, we have it from Eric Heredia. And he was talking about today's game. What is the benefit of today's game ending like it did? Nice and tidy, 3 hours, 45-minute game time. Yeah, lots of kids will grow up remembering this day, this historic day in baseball history, when a baseball game ended in less than 4 hours. Thank God the Blue Jays didn't have to actually earn the win.
He's talking about opening day with the extra inning rule. He's pissed about the extra inning rule. And because the extra inning rule was supposed to make it so games end sooner, and he's like, well, you're already playing a 3 hour, 44-minute game. What's the point? I mean, I understand that. Yeah. And then the next day, the Yankees played, I think, like a 3 hour and 39-minute game or something like that. So, yeah,
today
there was some slow
today
baseball.
Today was fast, too.
Today was quick. No, those are not fast, Bob.
Well, yeah, those were not fast. Today was very quick, though.
Today was under 3 hours, I believe, which is what I like to see, even though the Yankees
lost. This goes back to the point that Major League Baseball is just throwing a bunch of bullshit out there saying that it's making the game faster, and it's just not true. It's just not true.
Well, no. This was a COVID.
They're just trying to eliminate the games that go, 15 to 17 innings or whatever, 13, 14. And they just don't happen often enough to make a rule like this that changes the, however many games that go into the 10th inning. It's just dumb. It's trying to put a Band-Aid on a problem and trying to make a plea to the public. Like, we're making a game faster because now we're ending it by putting a guy on second base and giving them an opportunity to have a NCAA college shootout style victory. It's stupid. It does not work for me. It really doesn't.
I agree. This is Major League Baseball seeing a forest fire and pissing on it, thinking that's going to put it out. Of course they do the wrong thing. I do though think sometimes, especially when you get into those 14, 15, 16 inning games, which are rare, they become slogs because the innings have nothing happening because guys are fried. So if you want to start this rule in like the 12th inning, would you be down with it?
No, because it doesn't happen often enough to make a difference.
But when it does happen, I don't want to sit there like we had to sit
you
there.
You just sat
like
through a four-hour game anyway.
Do you remember the game against the Cubs? 18 innings against the Chicago Cubs like 4 years ago. It was a Sunday night baseball game.
It ended.
Was it
the Brett Gardner home run to win it?
No, Brett Gardner, that was the same weekend. It was in Wrigley Field. The Yankees played an 18-inning game on Sunday Night Baseball. We had to record a podcast.
Okay, that's Sunday Night Baseball. That's fine. That's your perfect storm for an argument right now.
Here's my the thing is, though, that game, it got to like the 13th inning through the 18th inning, and every inning was the same. Everyone was trying to go up there to hit a 500-foot home run to win the game.
That's every inning in every Yankees game ever.
But the extra innings became so monotonous because it was the same thing, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. There was the same inning every time.
Let me tell you that. Then fix baseball. Then I'm not saying fix baseball because it's broken.
I agree.
But then make them do different things. Don't go up there and try to swing for the fences every single time. Get on base, manufacture a run, do what you got to do to scratch a run across. Why is that the sports problem? And trying to change what we're doing with the actual sport and affecting wins and losses because now we're manufacturing a run fabricated out of the clear blue sky. There was a runner on second base. Nick Nelson, in his first appearance of the 2021 season, young kid, gives up a double that the right fielder probably should have caught. And now we're talking about him striking out the side, but the game is over. He lost it because that runner scored. Get out of my face with that nonsense.
Bob, what do you think of the rule?
I don't like the second base rule. I don't like that at all.
This is not a generational thing either. It's not a generational thing. I really don't believe that. I think this is just a bad goddamn rule. It's just a bad goddamn rule that makes no sense, that was fabricated out of nowhere.
I mean, if the rule's not there, we're still playing that game.
Still.
It goes into the 11th.
It's Sunday at 7 p.m. We're still playing that game.
Well, right.
There's another opportunity.
It's a three-day game.
The other people are saying, well, the Yankees had the opportunity as well with the runner on second base. Yes, that's true.
It did.
And guess what? That was stupid also.
They end the game in the ninth inning when you have first and third with one out and you can't get a run in. End the game then.
Fine. End the game. Right. You're right. Correct. Come through. Make things happen. That's right. Clint Frazier was hustling his ass off today. Let me see more of that from more people.
All right, let's get to the last mailbag question.
The last one is from Andy Guzman. He said, "Hello guys, love the show. After the first three games and the poor defense from Gleyber at shortstop, it's crazy to consider, even though it's only the beginning of the season, to place Gio at shortstop, move DJ to third base, and let Gleyber return to second base. Is that crazy?"
Is it crazy to question Gleyber's ability to shortstop? Absolutely not. He made three bad plays this weekend. Opening day, he had a ball in the hole on a shift that he just let go under his glove. It was going to be a tough play anyway, but it potentially opened up a longer inning for Cole. Then he slow played a ground ball late in the game and Teoscar Hernandez beat it out. And then today he made a throwing error. Gleyber's defense is a real issue. I think it's crazy to expect Gio to go to shortstop and be a full-time shortstop. I think that's crazy.
It is. At this point, you can't do anything about it. Gleyber Torres is the shortstop for this team unless an injury were to happen to him. That said, this is something that we're going to be watching a lot this year and identifying how he's either improving or not. We're seeing the same thing. We're seeing, you know, a guy that's as old as Gleyber Torres, we should not be talking about, who's a shortstop. We should not be talking about range issues. We should not be talking about, you know, these types of things that we are talking about as a shortstop. That should not be a problem. And it very well may be a long-term problem, which really does make you think about how the Yankees are going to construct this lineup into the future and identifying where Gleyber could shift. Because I still think, you know, assuming the bat plays much better this year, which I expect him to have a much better offensive year. If he's still a liability at shortstop towards the end of the year, they're really going to have to consider, you know, what 22 is going to look like with Gleyber Torres at second or third base, you know, making a move in some way and identifying how the roster is going to shake out in that way.
Well, they signed LeMahieu for 6 years. They have Gio locked up through arbitration for a couple more years. Gleyber's the shortstop for at least the next 3 to 4 years.
I could see a situation where LeMahieu slides over and Gio Urshela changes positions. I could see a situation where Gio...
Where's Gio? Gio's not going to shortstop at age 30.
No, I don't think he's going to shortstop, but I could see him... I could see them going... it's tough. It becomes tough. You're right. It does, because of what they have locked up. But the fact that LeMahieu gives them the ability and a little bit more flexibility at first base and third base, that they have some things that they can do. But guess what people have to get used to seeing? Guess what they have to get used to seeing? Tyler Wade in the games from the eighth inning on.
Yeah, and that's potentially an issue because you're taking Gleyber's bat out of the lineup.
Yes, and that's when he will be exposed as an offensive liability. Tyler Wade, I'm talking about, because if there's a close game, let's say it's a 2-run game or a 1-run game, and you need that, you could look at it both ways. If they tie the game, you need the bat, but you need to have run prevention and play good defense, because that could also be, you know, put the other team in the lead or tie a game. It's a tough situation there that Boone's going to have to manage. So we'll see what happens.
Find that out as Sanchez destroys that to left field.
There it goes. Deep to left. Really deep.
In the air to left field. Back at the track, at the wall. We are tied.
I pissed on a public building.
Yeah.
Out of left field, Scott, this one's going to hit close to home for you. And I know you've got some thoughts on it. So I just bought a house. I'm living in Bergen County, New Jersey. I just bought a house in Bergen County, New Jersey.
Yes.
And you grew up in Bergen County, New Jersey.
I did.
There's this asinine policy, rule, whatever the hell you want to call
it's a law.
In this county.
It's a blue, nothing, the blue laws.
Nothing is open on Sunday. Okay? And now...
Well, that's not true.
Well, restaurants are open on Sunday, but you can't go to stores and buy things. And like, you can't go to
stores that sell clothing.
Or things that sell home goods, because I just bought a house.
Well, they sell also potential clothing as well. It's rooted back into like a very, very old law.
It's asinine, and it makes my weekends difficult, okay? Because now I got a kid too. You've got a kid. Bob doesn't have a kid yet, hopefully. And when you have a kid, everything takes for goddamn ever, Okay, so it's like, oh, let's go to the tile store. I went back to the freaking tile store because we haven't picked out tile yet because there's a million options for tile. Okay, let's go to the tile store. What time do you want to leave? Let's leave at 11:30. We got to the house at about 1:45, and you get to the tile store and you spend 45 minutes there, and because you got a kid with you and the kid's crying and the kid needs to eat and he shit his pants again, it's like, oh, we got to leave the tile store. Guess what? We didn't buy any tile. Oh, let's go tomorrow. Can't go tomorrow because it's Sunday and it's closed. I hate this rule.
So I need to put a caveat in here. I have not lived in Bergen County in quite some time, so I don't know if the blue laws have changed or been tweaked a little bit. But the malls are all closed. The Paramus is closed.
Everything's closed.
The things there, but you can buy alcohol after 12 o'clock, right? Is that still that's still a thing?
I don't know about that. I just know about like stores that you would just want to go to on Sunday, one of the two weekend days when you're not working. Oh, it'd be nice to go to this store because I need to do some shopping. No,
well,
you can't do it.
You know that you can't. So plan accordingly.
I just told you it's hard to plan accordingly when you only have one day and a freaking 7 week old.
I mean, I'm not telling you that it's they're not made for you to be convenient. You just need to. It's part of your life now. I will say this. You're not very far away from New York. You can go up 17 and you can get into New York pretty quickly. You can get into Suffern. You can go to the outlets. You're not that far away living in Ramsey. So you actually do have...
Oh, now you told where I'm living and now...
Oh yeah, they're going to stalk your town and just find your house. There's three houses in Ramsey. You've already said it anyway. My parents grew up in Ramsey. There's a connection there. I have a lot of family in Ramsey.
It's very bizarre, actually, because people think this goes back to us sounding alike. People think we're brothers or cousins or somehow related. Not at all. I didn't know you prior to 2012. And it's just bizarre how much in our past or in your past and in my current life, there's like overlap.
Yeah. No, it's true. There is a lot of the Ramsey thing definitely put a little cherry on top of all that. But I mean, I'm usually actually today's Easter. Usually every single year for Easter, I'm in Ramsey, at my grandfather's house. And after he passed, it's been harder and harder for us to get back there. All of us, everybody together, but it's always been a thing. My parents went to high school there. I have a lot of family still there. So it's a cool place, but blue laws are a pain in the ass. They are definitely a big pain in the ass. And Sundays in Bergen County, you got to adjust. They're just different. I grew up with that happening. So I was very used to it. And, but yeah, it's a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah. I guess I just have to adjust.
You do, but like you are not that far away from open stores.
I know. I just don't want to drive 35 minutes to go do my shopping. I want to drive 5 minutes to go do my shopping. But is that too much to ask?
It's nap time. You know what happens when you drive? Kids fall asleep.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this episode. Opening weekend overreactions. Gotta love it. Hopefully they get back on track against Baltimore before the series against Tampa. Bob, good job on your first segment and your first full episode. We will talk to you. We're going to have a couple episodes this week. So just quickly, we mentioned this plan. Monday shows are going to be just like this, more longer episodes, traditionally like what you've heard from Scott and I. And then we're going to do some more quick hitting episodes throughout the week. And then Friday morning, we might be back at you with a quick hitter before the weekend. So stay tuned for those.
Can we talk about that real quick? Because we think we should give a little bit more details on what this format is and why we decided to do this. The quick hitting throughout the week are going to be topical. We're going to be looking at either things that have been written in this week or things that are happening on the field and be able to have a deeper conversation about a specific topic. Some of these will be with other people that come onto the show. Andrew and I will probably alternate having a guest on weekly. And again, diving into a particular topic as an example, I think
I'm talking to Andy Martino on Tuesday. He wrote a book about the Astros cheating scandal. So we're going to get into that stuff.
Perfect. Another example of this, Lindsay Adler came on the show last year, doesn't matter, 2019. I think it was towards the end of that. And we talked about,
it was actually 2018 when Rothschild was last year.
Jesus. We talked about the difference in strategies of the Yankees and how they were organizationally talking about the pitching staff.
Was Rothschild here in 2019?
And so we went deeper into that conversation and just really around that topic and really drilled into it. So there's going to be more of that stuff, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. Give us an opportunity to really get deeper on particular issues and topics that are happening within a current week. So if you guys, along with the mailbags that you're sending in for our Monday shows, if you have particular topics or things that are written, doesn't need to be on Bronx Pinstripes, can be written anywhere, any of the papers around the Yankees, whatever, and anything that you want us to dive deeper on, please send those in as well. We'll certainly be looking at some of the submissions from you guys. So that will be part of it. And then on Friday, we're going to be looking at a segment in the that we're going to record in the morning of five things going into the weekend, what we're looking for. So it's
maybe
going to
we don't put a number on it.
Five. I'm not going to commit to five. Might be three. Might be nine. I don't know. But it's going to be what we're looking for into the weekend. So again, a little bit more of a different coverage. The long show on Monday. Two drill-in shows, and then a Friday, what we're looking for over the weekend. So, we're excited about the new format. I think it's going to be good. Give us a little bit more of a different coverage, and I think it's going to be good for the season. So, again, we'd love to hear any feedback. We do this because, one, we love it, but we also are doing this for everybody listening to the show. So if you have any feedback or suggestions, we're wildly open to all of that. So hit us up. All right. And then and then Bob will format it and put it in the notes and we'll talk about it.
All right. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.